This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hi, everybody. Terry Braverman. Welcome back to Sports Talk 870. Seems odd to be sitting in the chair that Earl Robinson sat in for so long, and we wish Earl well wherever he is out there listening, and probably not. I hope he's in some warm place. But it's kind of interesting and fun for me to come back to WKAR after a lot of years and sit here and maybe take a question or two about Michigan State athletics when it was. I started here back as a student in the late 50s and worked at WKAR Radio for 10 years from 64 to 74. I'll tell our engineer, Aaron, we were over in the Quonset huts where Breslin sits today, and Jim Adams and I would do our radio sports cast from a little booth in the TV station. We weren't connected. We weren't live at the auditorium, which was where WKAR Radio existed. And we did our Spartan Sportlight television show there for 10 years, produced it with Jim. Was hired by Bob Shackleton, Jim Adams, and Dick Estelle back in 1964, and left in 74 to take a job with the Ralph Young Fund, was the athletic fundraiser for 28 years, have now been retired for 10, and yet I'm still doing a little work for the university as the public address announcer over at Spartan Stadium, have for 11 years, and men's basketball for the last same period of time for men's basketball at Breslin, and the PA voice for the Detroit Lions down in Detroit at Ford Field. So it's a little unusual to sit here and talk sports without a coach sitting next to me who I can ask a question to. I'm all alone. You get to ask questions to me. And in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about a favorite of mine, Pete Gent. But before that, I'll just tell you that I came from the beginning of Tom Izzo's press conference, but never was able to hear Tom because he had three or four players come on before him, Gary Harris, Adrian Payne, Keith Appling, all talking, of course, about Indiana. It will be the biggest game played at the Breslin Center in terms of impact, in terms of the number one team in the country playing. And we're waiting for the rating. I don't have AP or USA Today. But CBS Sports Today has Michigan State men's basketball rated number 3. So I'm guessing the coaches poll or AP will not put us that high. But even so, it may be a 1 versus 5, a 1 versus 6, a 1 versus 3. The highest two teams ever to play, to be rated and play at Breslin Center. As Indiana comes here tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the Hoosiers, probably number one in everybody's poll. They defeated the Spartans the first time, 75-70, when in Bloomington, Keith Appling fouled out early, I think scored 3 points, played 19 minutes, and Keith just said, that's not going to happen tomorrow night. He said, I've got to learn how to use my hands, not get a foul, not get in trouble early, and play against an outstanding team coached by Tom Crean, former assistant at Michigan State under Tom Izzo. You will have a clash of coaching styles. They know each other so well, and it will be it's just huge. As if the Michigan State basketball game wasn't big enough, Indiana Michigan State's going to be even bigger. And one stat I did pull coming out of that press conference: Michigan State against Indiana at the Breslin Center is 18-1. That's right, 18-1. It was before 2004 that the Hoosiers defeated the Spartans, and that was only once. However, as we say that, we'll tell you that Indiana has won the last two meetings between the Spartans and the Hoosiers. The game this season and the last game at Bloomington last year. So the Spartans have a lot on their minds, a lot of revenge. Harris, by the way, said he's healthy. The back is not giving him any problems. He's used to playing with the shoulder injured, and I didn't wait around to hear an update on Trice, but I'm guessing he probably will not see the floor tomorrow night. Anyway, that's basketball as the Hoosiers come here on Tuesday. It's Monday. We're going to talk anything you want to. Oh, I'll give you the phone number right now to call in and ask a question. It's 355-9527. Or if you're out there outside the 517 area code, it's 877-952-7870. That's 877-952-7870. I want to get right to my featured athlete at this time because he is really an icon. Can we call Jamie? We can get him on the line, Aaron. The fellow that we're going to talk about is Pete Gent. Pete played basketball for 3 years at Michigan State at 62, 1963, 1964. Of course, freshmen couldn't play that very first year they were at East Lansing. Pete came out of Bangor, Michigan. He passed away about a year and a half ago, September 2011, but went on, I should say, after his basketball career at Michigan State. He was drafted by the Baltimore Bullets in the 14th round of the NBA, but never made the basketball court. For some reason, he found out about a tryout of the Dallas Cowboys. He went down to a training camp, and I want to say the rest is history, but he was a five-year NFL player as a wide receiver for a very, very good Tom Landry-coached Dallas Cowboys team. And then his career after football turned into a writing career. He wrote, of course, the book and then eventually made into a movie, North Dallas 40. He wrote three or four other books and an unusual switch of occupations from professional athlete to professional writer. And on the other end of our line right now is a guy that probably knows more about him than anybody else, his younger brother, Jamie Gent. Jamie, how you doing? Oh, I have to punch a button. Is that... where am I, Aaron? did I punch the wrong button? See, I knew this was going to happen. Where's Jamie? What did I do, Aaron? Did I let him go? Did I disconnect him?
Yeah, you know, that's all right. It's your first day on the job.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Which one do you want me to press here? Oh, I'm getting no help at all now, Aaron. Jamie was the athletic director for many, many years at Hazlitt High School and agreed to come on and talk about Pete. And now what do I do is I mess it up. How do you like this blank talk radio here? Yeah, well, we're looking for Jamie. I'll say that Pete came back a couple of times to campus. He appeared on the 100-year anniversary of Michigan State men's basketball. And I was talking with Jack Ebling earlier, and he spent 2 hours at a book signing. And let me see if Jamie's there. Right there?
I'm here, Terry. I'm back. Hey,
Jamie. How you doing?
Good, real good.
I'm sorry I messed you up, pal. Jamie, you know, before we talk about Peter a little bit, I want to know how long you served as the AD over at Hazlitt High School.
20 years.
20 years.
Yep.
Wow. Before that time, I don't even know, you were not a Spartan. You didn't go to Michigan State, did you?
No, I got my master's from Michigan State. I went to Central.
Central Michigan.
Yep.
And you were how many years behind Pete growing up?
Two
years.
Yep.
And there was another brother also, another gent?
Older brother Charlie, 2 years older than Peter, yep.
Okay, what was it like back then in the backyard with the Gent boys growing up?
It was interesting. It was, you know, being the youngest, you got what was left, but, you know, it was exciting. I mean, there was some real interesting football games that took place in a 40 by 40 square, I'll tell you. We lived next to the Catholic church, and we played in the churchyard. And if there was more than eight people there, we'd play in the big field. If it was smaller, we'd play in the small field. And there was only one tree, and we never lined it up with anything. So if you had the ball, you were never out of bounds. If you were on defense, you're always out of bounds. So would end up in fights. And like I told you the other day when I was talking to Richie Jordan, was there and write some great stuff about
No, wait a minute. Let's go back, because this is interesting. This is another very interesting Spartan who came from, we thought, Fenville, Michigan,
he did.
Jordan, but he started in Bangor.
Oh, yeah. He was in Bangor until he was, I believe, fifth or sixth grade. And he wrote a nice little thing to when Pete Funeral about being able to play driveway basketball with us. Now, Pete would always pick Rich and pick Rich on his team and then win the game.
But now Pete is about 6'5", and Richie's about 5'7".
Richie's just a little bit bigger in a minute, but he was also as solid as a rock.
Right.
I mean, Richie was just unbelievable. Explosive, could jump like you couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
One of the greatest athletes. I've yet to see anybody.
Could dunk the basketball at 5'7". Oh, yeah. And I think still made close one of the record all-time records of points scored.
Well, Pete went to look at him. Pete called me on the phone, and Richie was playing at Fenville in the regionals over at Kalamazoo. Scored 60 points that night. Pete was always critical. You know, he always very look at people very critical. He was just amazed at the athletic ability Richie had. And he was because he played when he was little. He was a good kid.
So did Pete, in a sense, help recruit Richie to come to Michigan State?
I would imagine he said something to Richie about Michigan
State. Because Richie was younger, right?
Right. Well, Rich was quite a bit younger. Yeah. Rich was probably 4 years younger than Pete. He was two or three years younger than me. I think he was might have been two or three. I can't remember.
Now, let's go back to Pete for a moment. Yeah. Because in high school, he wasn't a three-sport star. He was a four-sport star.
Well, yeah, when you live in a small town with a small high school, about 300 kids in it, you play everything they give you.
Yeah.
We would practice baseball or track, and we'd go on our track practice.
Now, what did he run in track? Or did he high jump?
He was a 22-foot long jumper.
Whoa.
I think he jumped 22'9", something like that. He held the school record for a while, and another kid that he beat him. He was a good quarter miler, ran the half, did things like that. Hmm. And then he played first base in baseball.
A first baseman.
Yeah.
Quarter miler, long jumper. And what did he play in football in high school? What position?
He played but he broke his thumb early in his senior year and still caught 22 passes with just one good hand, but played the whole season in his hand in a cast. One of those braces.
Boy, that seems like the story of his career, doesn't it?
He was constantly beat up.
Yeah. But what then made Pete Gent decide to come to Michigan State and to play basketball?
Well, you want the whole story or part of it? The whole story.
Well, you were the state champions in basketball, right?
He was locked in to go to Kalamazoo College. Rolla Anderson was the big deal at Kalamazoo, and they came over and they talked to Pete, and it was all the deal. He was going to go to Kalamazoo College, and then we started to win the basketball tournament. And then we won the basketball tournament. And I don't know who scouted Pete for Michigan State, but I don't know who said they didn't think he was big enough, didn't think he could do it there. So apparently 40 was in the crow's nest over there at Jenison.
40 Anderson, yeah.
And then I think later that spring, he signed with Michigan State later that spring, but they showed interest. Michigan was interested in him too, though. He had been to Michigan but didn't like it. And Michigan State, he loved it. He walked on this campus and he was sold in a second. He came home and said, I want to go there real bad.
Okay, but did he ever entertain any thoughts of playing football at that time for Duffy Doherty?
Well, there were some conversations that he would have during his career with Biggie more than Duffy.
Oh, okay.
Because Biggie would catch him walking through the field house. And Biggie tried to talk him out, and he just didn't want to play it. He didn't want to play it then. He wanted to play basketball. He didn't want to get banged up. And, you know, he knew that because, you know, when he got done playing pro football, he was so beat up.
Sure.
He just literally had a little lazy.
So probably if he, we can only surmise, if he had played college football, he may not have gone on to professional football.
He may not have been able to take the beating. Yeah.
But now let's talk, Pete's career, and when you look at 3 years, 62, 63, and 64, he led the team in scoring all 3 years, Jamie. Yeah. We're talking with Jamie Gent here, Pete's brother. And I looked back and saw there are only, I think, four other players in history who have done the same thing, at least led the team in scoring 3 years in a row. And listen to these names. Gregory Kelser, Sean Respert, Steve Smith, and there's one other one, Mike Robinson. I mean, you're talking about elite company. He's averaged 14 points as a sophomore, 16 as a junior, and over 21 points as a senior, and also led the team in rebounding all 3 years at 6'4" and a half, maybe?
Yeah, he went to college about 6'3", I think, and they said he grew. Now, I'm not sure. He's always bigger than me.
Well, you know the story. But, Jamie, how about this? In the media guide, it lists Pete's name as George E. Gent.
Yeah.
And yet, I look at the different research I did, and it shows George Davis Gent.
Yep, George Davis. This is a family thing, though. My grandfather was the head of the family, and my mother and father wanted to name my brother Peter. He says you can't name a kid Peter, so they named him George and called him Peter. And then he all this happened when he started writing books. Mm-hmm. All his documents are George Davis, then in parentheses Peter Gent.
George Davis, in parentheses, Peter.
His name, and then Peter Gent was added in the middle. And then legally had to do that because he was signing everything Pete Gent.
Let's get to, he's done with basketball, 1964.
Right.
And I assume he goes through graduation because he's a smart guy. What did he major in school?
Well, he was an honors college.
His degree was in what?
His degree was in communications.
Communications.
Advertising.
Was he ever writing anything when he was in college in terms of papers?
No, he worked for Foot Cone. He did an internship at Foot Cone and Belding in Chicago, and he did a little stuff like that, but he never really did any real writing like that, like he did it after he got done playing football. No, he never, that was more of a necessity. He tried to figure out what he was doing. He did run a printing company, had his own printing company in Dallas, so when he went to New York, his partners didn't handle it well. By the time he got back, a lot of the clients were upset, so he had to figure out how to make money. So he figured, well, I'll just write a book.
Let's go back to making money. How did he hear about tryouts for the Dallas Cowboys, and what prompted him to go?
Dallas was exploring and experiencing. And I think, I don't know who got him in connection with Dallas, but I know they already had Cornell Green playing.
Well, remember, Gil Brandt was absolutely the guru of football scouting and recruiting and picking players who didn't play that sport. Cornell Green was his example.
Trying to pick them out. And they already had Cornell Green. And they recruited Pete to play defensive halfback.
Defensive halfback?
He calls me on the phone. This is a great. He calls me on the phone and tells me he signed to play football. And I says, where? He said, well, the NFL team. I says, well, who is it? He says, it's Dallas. I says, Pete, they're in the NFL. He says, oh, really? I mean, he wasn't sure what division they were even in. But he was always looking for something. He was always
looking
for
something. How much did he get to sign with the Dallas Cowboys in 1964?
I don't think he got anything to sign.
He never was drafted, so he was a free agent.
I don't think he got a signing bonus.
Pete, Jamie, I think I read where he did get $500. I may be wrong.
Maybe.
But,
he may have got something.
All I
can remember is putting him on the airplane in Chicago and didn't think I'd ever see him again. So, you know.
Do you remember any of his salaries in the 5 years he played?
Oh, yeah, I know. His first year was $12,000.
$12,000.
That was the joke. I was making $6,000 teaching school. He was making $12,000 getting hammered. His top salary was, I think, $23,000. But the thing was, he was doing stuff in his contract negotiation because you had to go negotiate every year. I think it was with the brand he negotiated with. And he would say things like, well, if I start in so many games, if I catch so many passes, they would give him little incentives. And that's the only way he made money was incentives.
You know, he was too cerebral for NFL.
That also got him a lot of trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he would see people do things to people that were just appalling, and these guys just think they were trying to motivate, and it was absolutely ridiculous. He wrote about a lot of that.
Do you think, Jamie, as you look back, do you think Pete Gent was making a diary while he was playing so he could remember these things afterwards?
He didn't have to write anything down.
He could remember everything?
He remembered stuff about basketball games we played in high school. I don't even remember being in the gym, and he remembers it. You know, when we played together for 2 years, and my God, it was just unbelievable. I mean, the things he would tell me that we did in games, and this guy, I remember, oh, yeah, okay. He had a tremendous memory, and he was very good at things, and he was very good at seeing things and had a very good system of remembering where it was and what was going on.
So all of a sudden, it takes a long period of time. He's out of football since 69, maybe 68. And in 73, out comes the book. Was he working on North Dallas 40 for all that period of time, to 3 or 4 years?
Not really, no. He was, well, I don't know. I don't know. He was in Dallas. I was up here. And we communicated not as much. The longer he stayed in Dallas, the less we got a hold of each other. He was reorganizing his life and doing things. He showed up here one day to track me. And I hadn't seen him in a year, and he shows up here with his future wife, and my superintendent looks at his wife and says, "Boy, look at her." And I said, "Yeah, I guess who's standing next to him?" He says, "Who?" I says, "My brother." Uh-huh. I haven't seen him in a year and a half. I don't talk to him in a good bit. But he was always looking for something different to do when he was in school. Just trying.
The New York Times wrote after Pete passed away, he was able to express in words what many players feel about pro football, both good and bad. While his writing left its mark on the game, it's equally clear that the game left its mark on him. Interesting. Andy Barrell, B-A-R-A-L-L, wrote that.
I remember that.
And here's a quote from your brother. "Anybody who has made it as a professional football player has survived the horror of real violence, facing the monster that lives in his heart. These men were true gods in ruins. Whether he stays a man is still a question of fate, because the monster is always straining to be loosed again." He wrote that after 30 years after North Dallas 40 came out. Yep, he was still thinking about it, wasn't he? He was still dwelling on it.
It bothered him the way that some of those guys were used in the game. And you're seeing some of it now, with all of a sudden everybody's concerned about head injuries.
Yeah, I know. That's very, very true.
These guys now? What are we doing to these guys? What are we cranking them up so bad? I mean, these kids now are so big and so fast. Yeah. And when we hit them with, and they put this helmet on, it's like a weapon, and that's the first, and they try to have this, you know,
imagine what Pete, your brother, would be saying right now about the concussion issue.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he'd have. And didn't he write for Sport Magazine for a number of years?
He wrote for a lot of magazines. He'd write articles for them and things like that for Sport. His first part of the North Dallas 40 was in Sports Illustrated. And so he'd do that Schaff was with Sport Magazine. Would do that. Yeah, he'd write some articles.
Pete called his time in pro football a hard, violent, and painful life, but he never regretted it. He said they were great years. He wrote in 2003, he said, "Terrifying, thrilling, happy, sad. Most of all, they were ultimately satisfying." Interesting. Yeah. Now, let's jump ahead. Now he's written North Dallas 40. He wrote a couple other books. And then my favorite, which was The Last Magic Summer, a story about Pete, a true story, apparently, about him coaching his son. His son's name's Carter. Over in Bangor. He moved back home to your hometown and wrote this book about coaching, reluctantly, his son's summer baseball team.
Right.
Terrific story.
Yeah, it's a great story. And a lot of parents should read that story.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, Jamie. And Nick Nolte, who played Pete in the movie North Dallas 40, did he not buy the rights to the book? Do you remember that right?
There's out there. Nick was involved. They were going to do North Dallas. He and some other guy named, I can't think of his name now, were going to have written some things on it, and they were going to do it, but it all kind of dies away. You know, and that's like grabbing clouds when you're dealing with that industry.
The book is called The Last Magic Summer, A Season with My Son. I absolutely identified with it, levels, and a lot of fathers could. But Pete had such a unique perspective, and the beauty that I think that would make of the movie is the fact that they ended up in the state championship against Kalamazoo, and a young player on that team was named Derek Jeter.
Yes, he was, and it was Derek Jeter.
And Pete, of course, had a ragtag outfit over in Bangor. They didn't have uniforms. They didn't have matching socks or hats or whatever. And this Kalamazoo team had all the spiffy equipment and the latest.
They did everything. They did everything. My son ended up playing for that coach at K. One of my kids ended up playing for me. That was kind of interesting.
But Pete's perspective was absolutely right, spot on.
Yeah, he was good at that. We did that with my dad. We played. We didn't have Mickey Mantle League, but they were in. But my dad coached this and we did that. A lot of those same type of things happen where people get ringers and all of a sudden you go play some team that you think isn't very good and they got this pitcher all of a sudden on the line. Those kind of things happen. And just in working with your son, it was also a healing book for him and his son because he and his wife had a pretty ugly divorce.
Ah.
And he brought his kid up to Michigan to raise him and trying to communicate with his son. And that's hard when you're raising your son as a single family, single parent, and your ex-wife's in Texas. And she and goes out and sees her and then comes back and, you know, what perspective in life he's got now. So
I can't imagine why that story wouldn't make a fantastic movie.
Well, it would.
And if Nick Nolte doesn't want to do it, I'm going to tell you, I think, you know who could do that? Jeff Bridges. I'm doing my own casting. And the movie's got to be made. And someday we'll all enjoy it, the last magic summer. Jamie, I appreciate you coming on so much. I hope I didn't bring up any, open any wounds. You know, I mean, Pete is such an iconic guy, and we miss him. We miss more athletes like that.
I agree with you. We have athletes like that. They just don't get sometimes they aren't willing to take the heat. Pete took a lot of heat when he wrote Dallas 40.
But he had thick skin.
He was really, literally shunned by Dallas. And a lot of people got upset about what he said about pro football. Now, everything he said was going on, and obviously it's mild compared to what's going on now.
Yeah.
But it's hard, and people have to stand up and be counted sometimes. And that's what Pete would do. He would do that. And sometimes when people do that, other people don't like that.
Jamie, let me ask you this. We have to take a break. Would you be willing to stick around on the phone a couple more minutes if a person wants to ask a question to you? Or
no
two,
problem.
If I can figure the technology here, we'll do it.
Okay. Don't worry about it. I'll stay here.
All right. Good. We want to take a break right now and ask our listeners to stay tuned for more Sports Talk after this short break on AM 870.
Want to know the secret to happiness? Dan Buettner says, find happy friends.
Each new friend will boost your own happiness by about 10%.
Dan Buettner spent 5 years on a search for the happiest people in the world and asked, what's the secret? I'm Neil Conan. Dan Buettner joins us with answers. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That was Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
Rain likely this afternoon with highs in the lower 40s. Rain mixed with snow overnight tonight, lows in the upper 20s. Then for Tuesday, a winter weather advisory from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Snow is likely until midday, then snow showers in the afternoon with areas of blowing snow, an accumulation of 1 to 3 inches possible, highs in the upper 20s.
Welcome back to Sports Talk, AM 870. I'm Terry Braverman. We're talking with Jamie Gent, former AD at Hazlitt High School. By the way, I just am told Associated Press has Michigan State men's basketball rated number 4 in the nation. Indiana, number 1. It'll be a doozy tomorrow night. Jamie, how many years? You said 20 years at Hazlitt, huh? How many years retired now?
I've been retired 5.
How's that going for you?
Terry, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I mean, it's marvelous. I do what I need to do, and I do what I want to do. And I really enjoy retirement. I'm still here in town. I get to see all the people at school. It's great. I really had a great time here. It's a marvelous district to work for. It really was.
Didn't your son, for a period of time, do stats around Michigan State?
Oh, my son. Yeah. And then Tom DeBine. Remember Tom?
Yes.
Tom was a baseball coach. Tom did stats. A lot of time, Ed would sub for Tom and that whole group. Yeah, he was around. He still works the Michigan State basketball stuff and that stuff. My daughter's over there working at Wharton now, but she's seats president for their arena. So.
Okay.
We got a lot of ties with university.
What is, and we're asking our listeners, if you want to call and ask Jamie a question about Pete Gent, to go ahead. It's 355-9527 or toll-free 877-952-7870. What is Carter Gent, Pete's son, doing these days?
Carter works at Channel 3 in Kalamazoo. He's a videographer or a cameraman in my firm, but videographer is what they use him for. And he does a lot of their camera work and does stuff there. And he's more in the road a lot. He has a son now named Austin, who's a sophomore at Larnorix High School, and he plays tennis, I think. Yes,
Austin Gent.
Austin Gent.
I always wanted to know, because I've never met another Gent family. Was Gent shortened from a longer name way back when?
No. When my brother passed away, I'm the last in the family. So we did a lot of genealogy work and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, we thought maybe because there is a Gent in Belgium, but when you translate it, it goes to Ghent, G-H-E-N-T. But you know, we came basically from England. It's Ghent. And we ended up coming, a lot of the family came into Brighton, Illinois, where they started. It's amazing how they all kind of ended up over here.
How did the family end up in Bangor?
Bangor, well, my grandfather worked on the railway mail out of Chicago, and then he bought a farm in a little town called Breedsville. And my father went to work for the railway mail, and the railway mail rule was you had to live within 10 miles of your job. Well, the train ran right through Bangor, but you weren't at the either end. He didn't want to live in Grand Rapids or Chicago, so he lived within 2 miles of the railroad tracks. So it was kind of he was within legal limits.
When Bangor won the state championship in basketball, you were a sophomore?
Yep.
And
yep.
Pete was a senior?
Yep.
What class was that?
C.
Class C. Okay. And now, Jamie, we have, what, 8 classes when it comes to the state championships, right?
No, in basketball, we only have 4.
Okay, football is 8.
Well, football, we have 8, yeah.
Do you think that's the right?
Actually, more.
Was
no,
that the
more
right way
that.
To go?
I think so, yeah. I think so. I think kids play too many games after 9, Terry. They talk more about this head hits and all this kind of stuff and the banging. You got kids playing 15 games, 14, 15 games. In high school, you got kids playing 45 games for a lot of high school, some of those kids.
Yeah. And I looked back at Pete's days, and if they played 22 games in a season or 24, and now we're playing 38, 40. You know, we're Michigan State is,
oh,
what,
yeah,
20
yeah.
and
yeah, yeah,
4,
yeah,
and we've got 5 regular season games and a tournament to go, 2 tournaments.
Yeah. Well, some of that's the success that Tom's had, which is marvelous because he goes deep in the tournament a lot.
Sure.
They have those games. But still, it's a long, hard season on these kids. It really is. And it's tough. And it has a toll on them, you know. Just trying to keep them healthy. I mean, these kids get banged up, and they play hard. Those kids give I'm amazed at the amount of effort those kids give on that floor every night.
Well, you know, I had that discussion recently with Hank Bulla, and he said, you know, he thinks football is getting a bad rap. Not a bad rap necessarily, but the concussion story gets all the headlines. And he says, I look at the other sports. I look at soccer. I look at my granddaughter. At basketball. How hard do they get hit without any equipment?
Any equipment on. Yeah. Well, football always gets the bad rap. I don't know why. It's the nature of the game. But,
yeah.
But there's the concussion syndrome that the biggest problem is with girls' soccer because the girls' head has a tendency to whip. When they get hit from the side, the head will whip to the side, and girls really have a tough time in soccer with concussions because they do a lot of head hitting. They do a lot of that.
And what can you do about that, Jamie?
I don't know, and I don't know what you can do about concussions with contact sports. I mean, really, because how can you? What happens is the brain gets shifted, and then it's real vulnerable the first time, and the second time is when the damage happens. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you really got to watch that because then the stuff starts to build up and you get the tissue start going bad. So they're doing a lot of studies. They really are.
And as a former athletic director, you know that these youngsters today are bigger, stronger, faster, have a better nutrition, a better diet, weightlifting program. Their bodies are moving faster, and the rules haven't caught up.
Yeah, and I you watch the game of basketball to now, and you watch these guys. I mean, back when I used to coach years ago, 20, 30-some years ago, you couldn't do this little quick step they're doing. You couldn't reset your feet. They're doing all this. They're letting kids walk. They're letting kids run. They're carrying the ball. But it's the flow of the game, though, as long as they're not gaining an advantage and this kind of stuff. And the game's getting so fast.
And when you go up so high, there's a longer fall.
Yeah, it was a kid the other day that hit his knee, the number one pick that hit. He jammed his knee against the end of the backboard because he was chasing a kid down. And it's just really
jammed his knee on the backboard.
Yeah, on the backboard on the standard that held up the backboard.
Oh, okay.
It's about 3 foot off the floor there. They don't have that long 6-foot, 8-foot area. See, most high schools you've got plenty of room at the end of that floor, and here these college kids are playing with 2 foot.
Yeah,
under that basketball. And the wrong alignment, it was just a bad break where he was. But there's this thing he hits, and it's right there at the end of that floor. And that's too close.
Yeah.
For what those kids are doing, what those kids are giving them.
You know, I went back and go back to Peter Gent for just a moment, your brother. I looked at the Dallas Cowboys, the 5 years that he played with them, and it was right before the Super Bowl came into being.
Oh, yeah.
At that time, it was before the merger of the National Football League and the American Football League, But the last 2 years, I think, that Pete played, 66 and 67, Dallas played for the NFC Championship against the Green Bay Packers.
Yep.
And the year they lost to them, Green Bay then had to play Kansas City to win the Super Bowl. So in essence, Pete was on the biggest stage of pro football at that point in time.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was. And here's a story. When I went down to see him the first time he played his rookie year, I drove down and brought his car down to him. And he was on the team, and we parked right next to the Cotton Bowl, right on in Fair Park. I mean, I parked up to the curb. I walked in, and the game was a late season game, and there was hardly anybody there, and Dallas was struggling, and John Henry Johnson was playing for Pittsburgh, and they beat him. I went down a summer later, 2 summers later, when they were playing. And I couldn't park within 2 miles of the stadium because once they started winning, it was unbelievable. It was the town just went crazy.
It is a fantastic franchise, but at that time they were still feeling their way along. You know, you didn't have Roger Staubach yet. You had Dandy Don Meredith.
Dandy Don Meredith.
He and Pete were close, weren't they? Were they buddies?
Well, they got there, and things happened, and you know they were within a pass. I think Pete's the first time they played Green Bay, if they had made the block in the corner of the end zone, and Meredith would have had time, he could have hit the receiver, but they didn't block the tight end. I think Davis got it, and they didn't. And then Pete missed the cold game. Up in Green Bay, he didn't play that game because he broke his leg against Cleveland in Dallas the week before.
Mm-hmm.
So he missed the ice ball game. He didn't play in that game.
Aha!
He played the year before though, and they'd have beat Dallas. They could have beat Dallas then, but they didn't get the break they needed. So you know, I mean, Green Bay, there was anything to do to win, but you know, a break here and there, and Dallas might have got there. So
it's so hard to believe in today's modern sports world that a player could make that transition from college basketball to pro football. And we talked about that. It's kind of a, did he ever think about the Baltimore Bullets way back then when he was so-called drafted in the 14th round?
We talked about that, but that was really a hard life, pro basketball at that time. It was really not doing well.
Well, it's not like football was a walk in the park.
No, but football was an up and comer. It really was. And he knew that. And he knew that if he could tag on with a football team, pro basketball was really struggling back then. It really was. He was in the 14th round. You know, he thought he could make it. You know, of course, he thought he could do anything. I mean,
Gotta love that.
It's actually true. I mean, he always had a positive attitude about anything. I mean, I played with him, and we'd be in behind games. He said, we can do this. We just got to do that. You know? So he thought he could make it, but he really looked at football. When he looked at it, and the opportunity came, he said, this looks like an up-and-comer, something I should get involved with. Well, you know, at that time, for the next 20 years, football really took off. And basketball struggled until Michael Jordan, until Bird and Bird. Bird and Magic.
Well, you know what? Jordan tried to play baseball. We know how that turned out.
That didn't turn out real There's a trivia question about
Who is the athlete that went to Michigan State, played one sport, but was drafted by two different professional leagues? And the answer was Bubba Smith, oddly enough, was not only, of course, drafted by the Baltimore Colts, but by a basketball team. And I want to say it was Baltimore because they saw the potential. Let's say he gets hurt in football. They wanted to have the rights to him because apparently at 6'7 or 6'8, you know, 290, he could have been apparently an outstanding high school player down Beaumont, Texas. Yeah. Gene Washington told me how good he was, but he said Bubba was drafted by two different leagues, basketball and football.
Stayed with the
one that he played.
He was an amazing person. He really was.
Yeah.
It's amazing how those things happen and all that. Most of these guys.
I didn't even know when looking up about Pete, when we talked about Gil Brandt drafting Cornell Green, didn't he have Bob Hayes, who was a track star?
Hayes played football. Olympic champion.
Yeah, Olympic champion in track. And now he sees the potential in him as a football receiver. But they also drafted, believe it or not, Pat Riley, who was a college basketball player, and I don't think that Riley ever went to camp, but he was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys. That's how creative they were.
Well, then Colin Ridgeway. Colin Ridgway.
Oh, I don't remember
an Australian football player that punted for him.
Oh.
They saw what a punter he was. Went down to Australia and got Colin Ridgway. He's the craziest guy I ever met. He was funny. You know,
if you hung around with your brother, I mean, you met some characters.
Well, it was interesting because back then, you know, I was playing at Central and I could climb on one of those 2212 airplanes. You cheap, pay $22 to $12 then hold your. Could pick up a North Central plane here in Lansing, fly to Chicago, run across the airport, pick up an American Airlines, and be in Dallas in like 5 hours. And then it was just like running around the guys I played with in college, except they were a lot bigger, a lot better athletes, but they were just there to play football. They weren't there to make money. They weren't there. They were just happy that they could play football a few more years and somebody was paying them for them. Most of those guys were all, I was there the peach rookie year. I was there for 4 weeks at the end of the season and sitting in the training room after practice. They're all talking about what jobs they're going to have in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
They all were doing selling this or working for somebody or farming.
And probably smoking cigarettes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I was smoking cigarettes, talking, doing all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
All that. But they're all talking about that was the society at the time.
Who was the craziest guy you met in your days with your hanging around your brother?
And the craziest guy I met?
Yeah.
Oh, they're, well, you mean by crazy?
Well,
just,
goofy, you know.
Well, I don't know about guys that worried you a little bit. Some of those linebackers, those guys. You know, Dave Edwards is just a great guy. I mean, there's a great story. If you want to read some, read the first chapter of I think it's in North Dallas when they go duck hunting.
I did.
And that'll tell you. But those are the kind of guys there. The Talbert brothers. I went with the Talbert brothers, Pete Lammons, my brother. And up to Aston, Colorado.
I would not want to be anywhere near any of those guys who had a gun.
No. We went. I went skiing with those guys one time up in
skiing.
Aston. Aston was the size of Williamson.
Okay.
Aston was just a little town. We had to drive 7 hours into it from Denver. You had to go back towards it.
Uh-huh.
It was just a great little place. And we're up there skiing with these crazy guys and Calvert. And I mean, it was just guys that were just having fun and enjoying life. And they were playing football as long as they could. When it was over, it was over. They had to go to work. And that's what Pete figured. When it was over, they had to start writing books, doing something.
Yeah,
it doesn't
but no.
like it is now. It isn't this. It's such a
business. Yeah. Although I think Pete sensed that. He knew that.
Well, he knew
it was
that.
A job.
That bothered him a little too because he just liked playing the game. And Tom, it was a business. There was no doubt about it. You know, you could be this for me, and I could do this. He'd move you around. Like you say, you're a piece of equipment.
Yeah.
If you couldn't do it for us anymore, you're gone. We got to bring somebody else that can, that you trust. That's what it is.
He tried to come back. Didn't he get traded to the Giants?
Yeah, he did. He got traded to the Giants and started all preseason, and then he and Allie Sherman got in a little disagreement, and he was gone.
So he never played a game in New York.
He played with New York. He was playing with New York. He played the last preseason game in New York. He caught like three or four passes, and I think he had a good game. And they were showing him to try to get somebody wanted to trade him, but Allie didn't want him. Allie Sherman didn't want him. I mean, he didn't like him. They didn't get along. Pete was a different lifestyle than Allie wanted.
Listen, I'm trying to trace this. I go from Bangor, Michigan, to East Lansing, to Dallas, Texas, to New York City, and I decide to retire in Bangor again. He went full circle, didn't he?
Went back to Dallas.
Okay, Dallas.
And then went back to Dallas, and then he got married, and then they moved up to Michigan right after he wrote North Dallas. Then moved back to Michigan for a while. Stayed in Michigan for a few years, he and his wife. Then they went back to Wimberley, Texas.
Uh-huh.
Lived in Wimberley, Texas, and then he wrote The Franchise in Wimberley. So he'd written three books by then. Franchise, he wrote North Dallas, then he wrote Texas Liberty Turkey Trot, then he wrote... And he wrote the franchise. Then the separation started. Then the divorce started. Then he came back to Michigan. And that was it.
Jamie, was writing those books, was it lucrative for Pete? I mean, did he make money on that?
Oh yeah. But,
so the residuals, probably the longer effect.
Yeah, well, he's still getting something from North Dallas. I'm running the trust, and he's still getting something from North Dallas.
Uh-huh.
But there's not enough to live off of. But no, it was tough. But it was a.
Did he have a hand in the filming of the movie?
Well, he helped write it.
He wrote the screenplay or in the original story, but then did he go to the filming of it or say, you shouldn't do that?
I was going to go visit him. I flew out. I went to a conference in San Antonio, and I came back, and he lived in Wimberley, which is just north of San Antonio.
Did they make the movie in Texas?
No, but I got there 2 days after he had flown out to go to California because they were going to start the movie. And usually they bring the author in to start the movie, and they did not have a working script.
Hmm.
So he started writing the script. Well, that's a story in itself. It's how he wrote the scripts. He would write
on the fly.
Script for the day before. And then if they wanted to change it, he'd go hide. So they couldn't change it.
Because he didn't want it changed.
Well, he'd tell me stories about climbing out of the room, out of the window of his little trailer and go hide so they couldn't find him. Because they wanted to go this way, he wanted to go that way.
Who was the director? Do you remember?
LeBlanc, I think, something like that. Frank LeBlanc, I think. Maybe he was one of the guys. That name I remembered, but yeah.
Oh.
So it's a different business.
It's
unbelievable. That's why all his other stuff, most of it, not all of it, but the franchise and Last Night of Summer are all tied up by other people trying to write screenplays for him and like that. So when they do that, they pay him some money. Well, that means they have the right to it, so it's tied up. So I know you'd like to see Last Magic Summer made into a movie, but that may never be made into a movie because somebody's got the rights to it and they just may not release it. Hart was the guy's name. Jim Hart. That's who's got it now, I think.
And well,
they just may not release it. You know, they may not have time to do it. They may have other... Somebody has to grab a hold of something like that.
Yeah, because the story's timeless, Jamie. It doesn't matter when it's made.
Right, but somebody's really going to want to do it and want to make it. Usually it's an actor.
Yes.
We'll find a piece like that and say, I could do this. I want to play this part really well. And they do it. And you see some actors do
that.
I'm
telling you, Jeff Bridges is the guy.
Yeah. They'll make it do it.
Well, I could see, there are others, but certainly.
He fit that character real well. He does fit that character real well.
And Nick Nolte would too, but Nick is aging now to the point where maybe he wouldn't want to do it.
Well, Nick, I don't know what Nick's doing or how Nick's doing. Nick has up and down periods. Right now he's doing quite well.
Well, he certainly... No, let me ask you this. Pete, when he saw the movie, was he pleased? And did he think that he was portrayed himself properly in Dallas 40?
Yeah, we never really talked about that. I never really got down and said, how would you like the movie?
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the movie. I told him I thought it was good. He agreed with me, but we never got down and got into a real unhappy. Were you unhappy about this, about the movie? Because I don't know if he ever really wanted to. He seemed happy with it, but we weren't living near each other then. He was in Dallas, I was up here.
Well,
and he did some other books came out. We talked about books all the time. He'd call me at any time of the day and talk for 2 or 3 hours about a book. This is going on. What am I doing here? he'd start telling me when he'd write stuff. He wanted to make it set in his mind before he put it down. So,
well, I'm going to follow it regardless, and I appreciate you taking so much time, Jamie, to come on
anytime,
with us. And it's always fun to talk about Pete.
Yep.
He's not going out of our consciousness. He's a great Spartan, and thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks a lot, Terry, for letting me do this.
All right, Jamie. Jamie Gent, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate the call, talking about old Peter. And I just want to go back to basketball. As I said, Michigan State just got the rating of number 4 in the AP, and Indiana, I assume, number 1. CBS has Michigan State number 3 in the country. 7 o'clock is the start. Everyone wants to know, to the athletes, Magic Johnson will be here tomorrow night. Oh, by the way, the passing of Jerry Buss, as you heard earlier, the owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, 80 years old, very close to Magic Johnson, of course. But the word is that Magic will be here to help with the telecast with Dick Vitale and Mike Tirico. And Tom Crean comes in. We're going to talk mostly about that game and the Michigan State-Indiana history on tomorrow's show. And if all things go right, we will have Judd Heathcote here on the show talking with us about the two coaches and about his view, his take on the game. And I also have a player lined up that played for both Tom Crean as an assistant coach and Tom Izzo as an assistant coach at Michigan State. And it would be interesting to get his, I'm not going to give you the name, but his perspective on the two coaches who will meet tomorrow night in what will be the nation's number one, the premier game of this season. It's not just Big Ten, even though it's the premier conference. It's the best game of the year nationally tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. And I also pulled up Indiana's schedule for those of you wanting to know who wins and what happens. Who does Indiana have the rest of the way? Besides Michigan State here, Indiana will go to Minnesota on the 26th of February. They have a week after the Michigan State game to prepare for Minnesota in Minneapolis. Then they are home to Iowa, home to Ohio State, and on the road in Ann Arbor. That'll be a doozy. Indiana ends the season at Michigan. A big game for both schools there. And, of course, Michigan State will be watching that same day as Michigan State plays Northwestern. The time has not been announced of the Indiana-Michigan game, so we'll wait to see. And then, of course, comes the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament and ratings and figuring out who is going to be seated where. And it'll be so exciting. The Big Ten season is probably as good as it's ever going to be. And we're going to talk more about the game. It is the game, as if Michigan wasn't big enough a week ago. Here comes Indiana. And supposedly they're healthy. Apparently Oladipo will play. I didn't get a word on Travis Trice, but my guess is he will not. Because if he's not practicing, he's not going to play. But I can't say that for certain. I didn't get the latest update from Coach Izzo. Let's see. Have we got some callers on the line here? Okay, let's go to Don on line two. Don, are you there, buddy?
Hey, Terry, how you doing?
I'm good.
Love your call of the games at Breslin. And, it's typical. Late in the Big Ten season, and things are once again getting real interesting for Michigan State. There was a lot of complaining and grumbling early on in the season when they weren't blowing out lesser teams, but just bits and pieces of the team got better as they proceeded along, as history has shown us Tom's teams will do.
And Don, I know exactly who is calling. Let me ask you a question. Do you think the team has gotten better, stayed the same, or isn't as good since Brandon Kearney left?
Boy, they would be better if he was still there, because they need his minutes, especially with Trice out, and he was a very good defensive ball player and got some length and can rebound. The best thing about this team, they haven't yet scratched their ceiling, I don't feel. The Michigan game, as a wire-to-wire game for being intense and just in their shorts defense, it was hard to top that.
I know, Don, you loved that game because you love toughness, right?
Oh,
I know you did.
Yeah, that was a thing of beauty, no doubt. And got to admit, I never saw that coming. I thought State would play well and win, but I don't think we expected the epic performance that they had. But
well, what do you think about Indiana now, Don? Give me your quick prediction.
Oh, boy, I think Spartans will win at home. If Oladipo's ankle's bothering him a little bit, that doesn't bother me a bit.
Oh, I hope he's healthy. I hope he's 100%. If you want to beat a team and they're number one in the nation, you don't want them to have any excuses.
Yeah, but I'll take any edge I can get. But no, I think the Spartan, and not to wish a bad injury on him, because he's a great ball player and, from all accounts, a great kid. And it's fantastic what Tom Crean's got going down there now. I mean, it just shows that fan bases have to be patient, even when they don't necessarily want to be. And
well, let's just wish Oladipo well in the NBA, okay, Don? Let's just say.
Absolutely.
See ya. We got to run, Don. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thanks,
all right, buddy.
Sure.
I guess we're going to wrap it up, Aaron, and we'll be back tomorrow at 105 and hope to do this again. We'll talk with Judd and have some fun. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Terry Braverman, and this is AM 870 Sports Talk Radio.
NPR News.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.